Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's good to see each of you out. It's been having a good time. Did a little roaming yesterday, and that was fun. I might do a little roaming today. I know I was left up to Oliver on that. But we want to talk about some how-tos today. And it's always good to know the how-tos when you go inside of the prison. And what we'll give you is a common sense overview of how-tos. Of course, the prison, when you go in, they're going to give you another set of how-tos. And every prison has its own rules, and you just kind of have to go along with that. Even if they're next door to each other, they have their own rules inside. They're still bound by the Department of Correction rules, but you still have in-house rules for operation. Okay, there's important things that we need to think about when we communicate with inmates. The first thing that we need to be mindful of is that we need to face the speaker. In other words, face the inmate when you're talking to them. Don't look up, don't look down, don't look around, away from them, but look them dead in the eye. Because there's a lot that you learn from looking people dead in the eye. Inmates will have a different perspective of you if you don't look at them. So you have to look at them because, number one, you're in a prison. And you have to be aware, and you have to be able to discern when you look into their eyes. When you go to the doctor, what the doctor does? He looks in your eye. And the eye, really, the eyes are the window to the soul. They can look in your eyes and tell you other things about your body. And I know that to be a fact. When I was in the seminary at Andrews, my wife got sick, almost blind. And we had to go to the ophthalmologist and just try to figure out what was going on. And when he looked in her eyes, he said that you have uveitis, which is not something that happened often. But he said that the only people that I've known that had uveitis, they had sarcoidosis. And he sent her to a pathologist, and the pathologist did a biopsy, and sure enough, she had sarcoidosis. And she had that until 78. It gave her a fit. But in 78, it went into remission. And she hasn't had any problem with it so far. And of course, all the internists tell her that is in remission. But the way her body feels, it seems like sarcoidosis and MS are playing off each other. But we never would have known that unless the doctor had looked directly in her eyes and saw what was going on. So that tells us that when we're talking with inmates, that we definitely need to look them in the eyes. And it just says a lot about you as a person when you look people in the eyes. The second thing is being able to listen to the speaker. A lot of time we're in front of people, they're talking, but we're not listening. Sometimes our minds are wandering. Sometimes we're trying to figure them out from the standpoint of being very analytical. We don't need to be analytical at this point. We need to listen to see what they're saying. And you learn a lot by listening. When you don't listen, you're prone to get into trouble. So when you're listening to them, you're listening for underlying ideas and feelings. And a lot of times they're saying a lot of things that are in between the lines. And so you never will be able to figure out those things really unless you listen to them. And there are people with feelings and they have their own ideas, and they may not really just jive with the way that we think all the time, but yet what they're thinking, their ideas are okay at that point, because you really don't want them to feel like what they say is not important, and you want them to feel like they are important, and that's a way you begin to develop the relationship that you're going to need with them as you work with them inside of the system. The fourth thing, you definitely want to keep your mind on what they're saying. And if you don't pay attention, you really get in trouble. So you got to pay attention and not let your mind wander or think about something else or forget why you're there. Because you're there, you know, on a mission from God, and certainly you want to keep those things in mind. You want to allow for your own biases, and what I really mean by that is that we are Adventists. Our ideas and our understanding of the Bible and theology are going to be different from ours, and so we have to just kind of allow for that, to know that maybe they are babes and they're trying to learn, and you already know, but you don't want to come across like I know everything and you don't know anything. So it's kind of like making an adjustment. Like if you were a baseball player, you were a good batter, and the pitcher was throwing some heat up there, and you were taking your swings, and every time you were swinging, you were missing the ball, and you recognize that now I got to choke up on the bat a little bit so I can just make contact. So that's kind of what you're doing here. You're just, you know, making an adjustment so that you can make the contact with that person at that particular time. Make a conscious effort to evaluate the logic of what you hear. And you have the right to do that. And if you don't do it, who is? So you're going to hear a lot of stuff. And you're going to hear some ideas that are different from yours. And just, you know, try to evaluate it. And not from the standpoint of putting them down or nothing like that, but just evaluation so that you can have an idea of where they're coming from. Don't judge the inmate's ideas by his appearance or his delivery. Now, some inmates may come in, they may have dreads, their hair may be going everywhere. Some inmates don't really have a good relationship with water, and they might have, you know, a little aroma when they come in there, but don't judge them because of that. That doesn't mean that their mind doesn't function. I just mean that they just haven't taken the time to really be on top of their personal hygiene. And in some prisons, I guess when it comes to showering, I guess you kind of a little bit apprehensive about getting in the shower. And if, you know, you drop the soap, then, you know, maybe something different going on. So for their own safety and protection, they may not even go to the shower that much. And they may be a little bit apprehensive. And some of their language that you would hear would be totally different from yours. The use of slang and dialect will be different from yours, but you know, don't judge them because of that. What you're trying to do and you want to do is get the message over to them. Yes, sir. Cursing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ask them not to.
Right.
You.
Or do you let them
call? Yeah.
You. You're in God's chapter right now.
Right. So just can you sort of hold it down in a language type deal? Or?
Right. You have the right to confront them on that type of behavior.
Okay.
Because if you just let them go on and curse and curse and curse, then it began to dilute. The reason that you're there and the message that you're trying to give. So always have them to speak English to you and not French. And you know how they always say, pardon my French, and they start cursing?
Yeah.
Well, tell them, well, just switch back over to English. We'll leave the French off.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't interrupt the inmate if you know they say something that's contrary to what you believe. Now their thoughts on things are going to be different. You know, somebody may come up and you may be talking about heaven and their parents may be dead and they say, well, I know my mom is in heaven and she's looking down on me. Well, we know that's not true. But then we don't want to just interrupt them and say, no, you're wrong about that, and your mom is still in the grave waiting on the resurrection. But you will have an opportunity as you share to make that correction. But to do it all of a sudden, just quick interruption, really just going to make it a combative conversation. And going to lead to theological arguments about Bible principles, which really don't gain any traction in terms of trying to get Christ over to them. So I always say, don't get on your hobby horse. stay off the horse. Just listen to them, because you're going to have the opportunity to share. And they're probably going to be there long enough for you to share with them. And they usually not going to catch the bus and go home in the evening and come back the next day or be gone for good. They're usually going to be there for a while. And you have every opportunity in the world to share with them. And let Christ, who is the answer, have the last word and not you yourself. And I always say, let him have the first word, the middle word, the second word, and the last word. Because it's all about Christ and not about us. And when Christ is left as the last impression, that's the impression you want the inmate to have. Because that's what's going to be valuable to that inmate in making a change in his life and becoming a different person. And so you definitely want to make Christ the center of everything that you do. And don't judge the inmate's motives. In other words, what I'm just saying, you know, when you're working with them, just don't be judgmental. Give them a chance, because they always told me that even God uses intensified tide, and what doesn't come out in the wash, it'll come out in the rinse. So then you don't really have to do the judging. It'll all show up. And sometimes their intentions are good, but they just don't know how to communicate it. And you'll find that basically inmates inside of the system, they do have a desire most of the time to do the right thing. They just have not been taught how to do it. And some of the things that they did to get locked up were just contrary to the principles of how you should live. And so when you introduce them to Christ, Christ has all of the principles of living. And then they began to learn the principles and apply them in their lives, began to change. Okay, we'll go to the next one. Communicating with inmates, those are some principles in communicating with them, and it's very important that we be able to follow those principles. And you'll find that when you work with inmates that there will be some fun people that you'll enjoy. How to work with security. You'll find that there will be some fun people that you enjoy sharing the love of Christ with. And when they come and you made friends and you put that good impression up, they're really going to just keep coming, and they're going to tell others about you because they're going to say that you're straight up. That's an inmate term to say that. That you're genuine, that you're good people, and they love people who are straight up. Okay, how to work with security? Don't bring handbags, wallets, or full key rings into the prison. And you want to bring your ID, whatever ID that you have for getting in, but your wallet and keys, I would suggest that you leave it in the car, or if there's a locker, that you lock it up in the locker. Just have the necessary things to get in outside of the prison. And the reason they don't let you bring handbags and so forth into the prison is that you can put so much in a bag. And we know that when women carry bags, it's almost like household. Everything is in there. And so, there are a lot of different kind of things could go in a handbag. So that's why they say leave all those things in the car. Don't bring loose cigarettes or open packs into the prison. I don't think that Adventists would probably have cigarette. Now you might have a sad Venus, might have some, but a true Adventist Christian is not going to have any cigarettes. But the reason that they say don't bring loose cigarettes, because you can hide them little funny cigarettes in there, and you can distribute drugs, especially Jimmy's. Inside of the system, Jimmy just laced with marijuana and cocaine. And a guy can get a pretty good high from that. And so that's why, because it's easy to transport drugs in a loose cigarette package. And of course, that really is not a big problem to us because the Lord has given us the victory over it. And those who have not got the victory over, they're going to keep it incognito, so that you don't know that they're doing it. So they're not going to bring a pack of cigarettes. If they might have it hidden in their glove compartment in the car or at home, but certainly not in their pockets anywhere. Don't expect to enter the prison at times other than scheduled activities. Whenever you're scheduled to go to the prison, please go and be on time. And if you don't keep your appointments, what can happen is that you can be taken off the list. And you don't want that to happen to you in your ministry, because you have such a great ministry. And there is no ministry like the ministry of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. They go there and work with prisoners. Because when a prisoner really grabs hold to the message and it really makes that change in his life, that prisoner really stays out of the system. and you involve them in churches. And when they come out, I can never stress it enough, the people that you work with when they come out of the prison and they have the desire to be members of the Adventist Church, don't leave them alone and just let them float. Stay in contact with them, work with them. They may not let you do it as a volunteer, but if they come to your church, then there are other people who can work with them and nurture them. And of course, you know, it's hard to, sometimes it's hard not to make contact or say something to them, and they're going to come up to you and you can't just diss them and say, well, the system says I can't have anything to do with you. But, you know, in your church, you still have to encourage them because you work with them. You have a relationship with them. And there in the state of Tennessee, they would say, look, you can't have any social relationship with the inmates who come out. But if they come out and come to my church, well, I'm going to be supportive of them. And if that was the case, like I told the students at Columbia Union College, there was a gentleman at the prison named James White that was in prison for 35 years for second degree murder. And when I first met him, I just would say to White, the first day I met him, I said, hey, that cigarette, you know, it's going to take 7 to 10 minutes of your life away from you. And so from then on, I just, every time I passed him, I would just kind of like jokingly say, 7 minutes. And so it resonated after a while, you know, and he joined the Adventist Church and quit smoking cigarettes, stopped drinking. And he said that the only reason that he joined the church was because of the way I lived my life. And I really never preached to any inmates like that, where you got to become an Adventist. Well, I was working for the state government, so I couldn't do that. It'll be a conflict of interest. But if they asked me, I told them. And so, you know, to make a long story short, when he came out of prison and came to the church, my wife introduced her first cousin to him, and they ended up getting married, and so he's in the family. So I can't say, hey, look, I don't want anything to do with you. The state said I can't. But he's turned out to be, he's an extremely nice guy. I told him how he was a deacon in the church, youth Sabbath school teacher, men's ministry leader, really doing just a fantastic job, and has his own business. He painted the Tennessee Titan houses when they new guys come into town, and does a tremendous job, and very generous to the church, and hire young people during the summer, hire prisoners when they come out of prison and give them an opportunity to get back on their feet. Doing a great job, but just suppose I was just dissing and so I don't want anything to do with it. He could be gone the other way. But you know, there are some things that you just have to use your common sense on when it comes to relationships. Don't attempt to bring books, letters, pictures, food in the prison without permission. Always make sure that you talk with the chaplain about what you can bring into the prison. And they usually will write a memo and have it at checkpoint and just let you know what can be brought in. And of course, checkpoint would know. And checkpoint is you know, at the guardhouse where you come through the gate. If they have the memo and on there it says that the Adventists can bring in today to conduct their worship service, they can bring in Bibles, books, guitars, saxophone, whatever you need to conduct your service with that day, Just make sure that you contact the chaplain. And if you're in Edmonton, I know Pastor Johnson, I'll be glad to work with you on that. So always try to get permission. Wearing shorts, see-through clothes, low-cut dresses, tank tops, and sundresses into the prison would not be something that would be permissible. You don't want to... See, the thing is that these guys are locked up, and they don't see women other than security guards. And if you come in any way that would excite them, that won't be too good for you and your ministry. And so the tank tops, you know, you're making sure that they wear bra and underwear. And all those things. I mean, that's common sense for Adventists anyway. They're pretty, Adventist ladies are modest and supposed to be anyway. And a few gonna go out who have not attained that yet. We have to stress that not only for volunteers, but we have to stress that for visitors who just visiting every week. And because many ladies have gotten pregnant on the ball field, in a visiting gallery somewhere. The thing about guys and ladies, if there's a will, there's a way. And so we've had many prison babies in the States. They've had binoculars looking out on the ball field, watching everybody, but if the lady doesn't wear underclothes and the guy doesn't wear underclothes and she sits in his lap, you know, it's on. And that happens sometimes. So that's why, you know, they stress that you wear, you know, underclothes. They have to stress that to visit. Sometimes we have to send women back home that come out to the prison because they're dressed inappropriate. And so they're trying to, you know, protect things there. Bringing money and drugs and medication in prison, you definitely want to leave those things out. And if you're on medication, leave it in. You take your dose, leave it in the car, or lock it up in the locker, because you don't want to get blamed that you're smuggling pills inside or prescription meds inside of the prison. Okay, the things you want to do, you do want to bring your ID and your volunteer card and necessary keys. Women do wear the underclothing. Do leave your money in your car and follow directives and orders in the prison, and don't wonder about the prison. If you want to see the prison, you can get with the chaplain and they can arrange a tour so you can, you know, tour the prison. But if you just wander by yourself, you know, then it's a liability factor. And of course, basically inmates are not going to bother you, volunteers, because there is an 11th commandment, and that is, thou shalt not hurt a free world visitor. Now they believe in that commandment strongly because of the fact that without you coming in, they would have no hope. You're what they're looking for every week. You're the hope that they're looking for. You bring hope to them, and without you, the Department of Correction will be a deep, dark hole. You all are the light that come into the prison. And that light shines brightly. And prison wardens, they recognize that without volunteers, it would be a hard job. It would be more like a concentration camp than it would be a prison. And so, you know, they're thankful to you for you coming in and working with the inmate population. Okay, we go to the next slide. That deals with volunteer rules. When you go to the prison, you know, just try to go straight to your destination, and go in and do what God has inspired you all week that you want to do for the inmates during that time. And they will be happy, and some of them are just anticipating. They're waiting on you to come so that you can share God's goodness and His word with them. Yes?
I was going to say earlier, that's another reason why you shouldn't be late either, because these people are counting on you at a certain time.
Right.
They keep showing up.
Right. Yeah, definitely need to be, you know, punctual. In all time, it makes a difference in your program. Okay, we'll look at some volunteer rules. And one is, don't let residents talk you into sending them money. Now some guys have got some smooth lines as to why they need you to send them money. And one of the worst things you can get caught up in is sending money into the system for inmates. Now, if it's a relative or something that you want to send money to a prison, I would leave that totally up to you, because they're probably not going to have a whole lot to say. But if you volunteered at a prison, now that's one trap you don't want to get caught up in, because it can be a very enabling thing. You start doing it and it just keep on going. And you don't want to get yourself in no kind of compromising situation with that. Don't let them have you bringing it in, and certainly don't let them talk you into taking it out. And as I said on yesterday, you know, no matter how tight the prisons are, in the prison's supposed to be a cashless economy with no Canadian money behind the walls. Every prison in Canada, they have some Canadian money behind the walls. And even on the lockdown units, somebody got some Canadian money. Even on death row, somebody got some Canadian money. And the thing is that we who work in a prison, we're not smart enough to find all that money. They're experts at hiding stuff. It's just like we can't find all of the shanks that they have inside of the prison. Every inmate in a prison can have two or three shanks that he has hidden somewhere that he knows how to get his hands on if he needs them. And we've even got shanks out of the chapel that were hid up in the window sill. And of course, the window sill probably was up about top of that cross. And I don't know how they got up there, but they were up there. And they had those things up there for protection. And of course, The smallest guy cannot be no taller than Saul and no larger than Saul. But if you make a threat to that person is going to take you out no matter how big you are before you get a chance to take them out. And so when they make the shanks out of glass and chair legs and steel that they get a hold to, and a person can come up behind you, come over your shoulder, and when he comes in like this, he can just split a whole bunch of organs and take you out. And that has happened many a times in prison. But that was just kind of getting off on not to get into compromising situation or bringing things in. The next thing that you want to make sure is that you don't give out phone numbers and addresses. Don't let anybody have a direct path to your house out of the prison with knowing how to get to where you live. Neither give them your phone number. And there's a real danger in giving your phone number. And probably the biggest danger is that you're going to have a phone bill that you can't pay. Because every time you get a call from an inmate in prison, it's just going to say a collect call from the Bowdoin Department of Correction. And that call is going to be expensive. And the thing is, inmates are kind of like phone junkies. They'll call you 10 times in a day because they just want to talk. And every time they call you, now, at one time a collect call in the state of Tennessee had just a base charge of $2.50 for the call, and then it escalated every minute that you paid for being on that collect call. So you don't want to get caught in those kind of situations. So don't give out your phone number. And another reason you don't want to give out your phone number and have a path to your house is that I have a friend whose cousin did that. And when the guy got out of prison, he came straight to her house and killed her and the kids. So you want to protect yourself by all means. And because you may have heard the story not too long ago, when a guy got out of prison and he knew where the judge was, and he told the judge when he sentenced him that he was going to kill him. And when he was in the prison for a life sentence, and when his life sentence was over, he got out, he went straight to the judge's house and killed the judge because he knew where the judge lived. So it's important not to have direct routes to your house. Don't make phone calls for inmates. That's what the chaplain's job, one of the job descriptions of the chaplain. Then there are counselors, there are OICs, that's officers in charge. That mean OIC mean officer in charge, that they can go to, and they will make phone calls for them. But you don't want to get caught up in that, and because once they start having you to do it, they're going to keep on bugging you about doing it, and then you start putting yourself in a compromising position in which you don't want to do. Don't be expected to be well received if you confront the administration. Now, you know that when you come into prison, sometimes security can be kind of obnoxious. Sometimes they can just say things, or they can rub you the wrong way. But don't stand there and argue with them and make a scene. Pass it on to your group leader. Let him pass it on to the chaplain. And the chaplain will talk with the administration and the captain of security and try to get the issue resolved. Because if you do, they train security officers in prison how to write you up and make it stick. And so they can do it, and I've seen them do that a lot of time, and people have been done wrong because of that. So you don't want to spend your time there arguing with them. Just let the appropriate people take charge of it and handle it for you. And you know, and that's what your group leader and your chaplains are for. Okay, don't talk to one resident about another. This can cause infighting. If that one inmate, you know, he's talking to you about something, And then you in turn, you talk about another inmate, about this inmate, and of course, then they're going to get into it. That's going to destroy your credibility as well as your confidentiality. So what you talk to about inmates, you know, will be confidential. The only time that you don't want to be confidential is if that inmate is talking about killing somebody or killing himself. Then you want to make sure that you report it. And it's for the safety of the inmate and for the safety of everybody around. And I would hate to have all my blood somebody who killed somebody and I knew they were going to do it and I didn't say anything. So, you know, make sure, you know, that you handle that in that fashion. Don't become objects of one-sided love affairs. And this can happen both in male and female institution, with men and female prisoners and women with male prisoners. And as I always tell the ladies, if you marry a guy in prison, the only thing that you can always be assured of is that I know where my man is and that he's not out running the street. If there is somebody in the prison, and if you're a female and you find that, well, this is a guy, I really like that we got things in common and so forth, and I don't know how, and they can talk to you and you'll start saying, like I hear them say all the time, that we've talked and we just found out that we can really talk to each other and share with each other and feel good in our conversation, and they end up wanting to get married. But if you find someone that you really like, if you're a female, then please get off of the volunteer list. And if it's a lady that's going to be involved with an inmate, or if it's a man that's going to be involved with a female inmate, whoever the group leader in your group, make sure that they know, and if the person don't get off the list voluntarily, put them off. You just have to be that stern about it, because if you don't, then your group is going to be jeopardized. So make sure that you do it in that fashion. Now, this is the only thing that I can say, you know, about a person who finds somebody in prison that they want to get married to. Don't marry them right off. Let them come out of the prison. Let them join the church. Let them join the church not because of you, but because they love the Lord. And then let them work, get their own place to stay, be active for at least a couple of years. And then if you want to let them take you to McDonald's, then let them do it. But it's something that you don't want to rush in, because there's a lot of baggage here that you got to deal with. And the suitcase got to be unloaded. And you don't want it to be unloaded abruptly. You want to make sure that he takes the time to get all of this stuff out of this suitcase before he bring it into a relationship with you. And so, you know, that's something that you can just pass on to someone if they're on your team and they feel like that this person is somebody they want to be involved with. Don't be shocked or scared or intimidated by what you hear in prison. Prison inmates, they raise a lot of sin sometimes. And curse and swear out loud, and you think that the world is getting ready to come to an end sometime when you hear. When I worked in a prison, though, in the counseling office, we had the counselors over, and we had the chaplain's office in the air, and around us there were dormitories where the guys stayed. And sometimes the guys would be outside the door, and they would be cursing and swearing and like they'd get ready to kill each other. Of course, we had a young Caucasian female. She didn't understand black people fussing at each other. So she got so scared, she jumped up and ran over to the warden's office in that area. And these guys getting ready to fight. And I looked out the door and saw who it was. I said, they just selling wolf tickets. And that's all they're going to be doing. For when they get quiet, then I'm going to be scared. That is that you just can't worry about things that you be hearing when you come inside of the system. You're going to hear a whole lot of stuff. But when you come in, just go on to your destination. They have people inside the prison to handle guys if they get unruly. And you know how security and how police are. If one person get out of line, you probably have 10 or 20 officers coming. Just like if a police calls, you'd have so many coming, they'd be running into each other and get into the scene. So, thing that you want to do is that you want to be sure about what you say. You're God's ambassador. You don't have to go in being intimidated. You don't have to feel intimidated. You don't have to be nervous about it. And of course, I guess sometimes when you feel butterflies, it may be good because it still keeps the fear of the Lord in your heart, and you know that it's not about you, that it's about God. But just be sure about what you're saying. God promised to be with you. And he simply just tells you, you know, just go in and speak. Just open your mouth wide and I will fill it. He promised us that in the division of Psalms, that he would do that. And you are his ambassador. You are his emissary. You are the John Carys that God chose. The ambassador of goodwill that God chose to go inside of the system and to tell the men and women about his love. Be friendly without being over friendly. You don't want anybody to get the wrong impression that you're trying to flirt, whether it's male or female. Because some guys, they, you know, when you're friendly, they say, man, did you see how Gail was looking at me? Well, Gail wasn't really thinking about him, just trying to be friendly, but you don't want to go overboard with being friendly. If you come in and the guy says, oh, so you sure are fine. You're the prettiest woman that I've ever seen. Just tell him thank you and move on to the next subject. Don't linger with no kind of flattery remarks. Just say thank you, move to the next subject, because you don't want anybody to get a toehold on a conversation that you don't want to be a part of. So you squash it at the beginning and you don't have to deal with it in the future. You know, we got to be friendly because, you know, Jesus himself was friendly. And we are his people with compassion and love for those who have made mistakes. And we have to be friendly. We can't be a sourpuss. But it's just saying, you know, do your friendliness in moderation without going overboard. Be honest. Always be truthful about what you're saying. When you're honest, as we've said before, you are genuine. Be genuinely honest, and inmates appreciate that. Because if you're anything else, they would know it because that's what they have been. They have been phonies, and they know phonies. They know when you you're trying to be fake. They know all of those things already. So just be honest in your working with them. Be willing to confront manipulative behavior. Just like when you mentioned about cursing, be willing to confront that. If you know the guy is trying to pull your leg, let him know that I know what you're doing. And if you don't stop a person when they're being manipulative, they're going to keep on being manipulative. But you, as a worker of God, and who God has given wisdom and knowledge, then it's your job to let them know in the name of Jesus what's going on. It is not that you're trying to be smart or hard or rude or anything, but because of your position and the reason why you're there, you have to let them know if they are out of line and trying to pull your leg. Do not be influenced by rumors. Prisoners have some good rumors and propaganda that go around sometimes. And so don't be influenced by that. That was old country, really southern country program called Hee Haw. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yes.
And when they used to come on singing, "I don't go around spreading rumors," well then don't spread any rumors that inmates come up with. They come up with some good ones. And of course, I think I told you yesterday how inmates the grapevine for inmates is better than the Adventist grapevine.
Yeah.
Because they can what's going on in one prison over in BC, when they get over to the Atlantic, it'll be over there before the day is over. Because they know how to get on the phone and on three ways and how to spread stuff. And just about somebody knows somebody in every prison that you got. Because a lot of guys from the same community are already in prison. And so they already know each other. Sometimes in the States, in certain prison, when the guys came in, hey, it's like a reunion. Because all of their friends are already there. And so that kind of like contributes to the spreading of the rumors. So as my old saying is, telephone, television, tele-admin. And you need to get around the world before you can get your boots on. And that's how the inmate's grapevine is. It's good. Follow the dress code and be aware that there are people in prison who perceive normal gestures as advances. So that thing there, you would have to be careful. Accept what is said without being judgmental. We can always come up with judgmental attitudes toward people by what they say. But sometimes we just have to listen. One thing I always try to do is that no matter what people say, I don't try to judge them. I don't try to analyze them. My mom taught me when I was younger. She said that, give a person all the rope they need. If they're not true, they'll hang themselves. And that's how I deal with individuals. I don't usually let anything blow me out of the chair. I try to just stay relaxed and laid back and try to flow with the flow when it comes to conversation relating with people. Keep your cool. Don't let anybody, while you're doing prison ministry, rattle you. Keep it cool when you come in the gate with security. There are some inmates that may come to your meeting, they may act up, but if they act up, you have a recourse. You don't have to take that. You don't have to act out with them, but all you need to do is report them to security and have the person removed from your service if they're disrupting you. But I don't think that we would be a real match if we went inside and we lost our cool and got real combative and confronted with an inmate. It wouldn't be a good match. And I think it would get real ugly. So, keep your cool and pass everything on to those who are in authority. Listen to problems, offer suggestions if solicited, and respect confidentiality. And basically, I think what the Lord has given each one of you, He has given each one of you an insurmountable amount of wisdom and knowledge that you can share with others. You know your story, and sometimes you may have come down some of the same streets that they're on, and you know what God did for you to turn you around and to help you to get on top of things. So then you can listen to their problems and offer them suggestions based on what God has done for you and where you've been and how you have overcome, and how you can offer them some suggestions on how they might improve the quality of their life. And remember, I said we are offering them suggestions. We're not offering them advice. We're offering them suggestions on how you can live your life in a better way. Take problems, complaints, and questions to the program sponsor if the group or individual with whom you work is unable to help you. That's why every group need to have a group sponsor, so that person will be your liaison between you and the administration. And while you're working inside of the system, certainly make sure that get involved deeply enough and always come up with some good ideas how you can improve the quality of your service. Now, in the next PowerPoint, we only have maybe like 20 minutes, and I don't know, we can't get too far in it. But if you have some questions that you want to ask, you can feel free to. But we would only be able to just cover the front part of this, the next PowerPoint presentation, and we would have to finish it tomorrow. And it's how to help a scary church do prison ministry. A biggie, because you have a lot of churches that are really, really scared to go inside of prisons. And I can say, for a fact that when you go into a prison and you've never been and you hear those doors slamming behind you, it can create a little anxiety. And especially if you have to walk through 11 of them before you get to where you need to go. And then after you get through the 11, if you have to walk through another 2,500 feet out through about 1,500 inmates who's out on the compound, just walking around and roaming, that could create some more anxiety. But the biggest anxiety that was ever created for me was when I had to go and sit down in the record room and read somebody's record. And then I saw how easy it was to get inside, get locked up. And then I said to myself, if it were not for the grace of God, this would be my record that I'm reading. And so there's nothing that we can ever boast and brag about. All that we can be grateful for is the grace and the mercy of God that has kept us and kept us out of those situations. And when I sat down on death row, when I walked down the walkway where James Earl Ray was then, and walked down with Steve Pickle, who was one of the notorious killers in the state, and who crawled out the top of death row, went out the ceiling, and went over one of the other units and got in a cell somewhere. And they had to recover him real quick because he was a dangerous man. But to sit down in a cell with six death row inmates at a time, and to sing and pray with them and worship with them, that wasn't scary. To walk down through the corridors of the death row cells, that little corridor that go down between the cells, I walked down through, and a man come out of the cell going to take a shower, and nobody was on the walk but me and him. That wasn't scary. To be down on lockup, and you're walking down through there, and the guys, they're throwing all their food out at the security guard when he passed, throwing it out on him and throwing feces and urine out on him. And worried about whether they're going to throw some out on me, that wasn't scary. I never thought about them throwing something out on me. They never did. And to be standing in the midst of a riot when inmates were tearing up the prison and burning up their clothes and burning down the cafeteria and taking everything out of the commissary. And I'm standing outside where they are and watching them do it. That wasn't scary. Because they walked me out the gate and always told me that if nobody get out of here, you will. And they made sure I got out. They took me to the gate and I went on out of the prison. But those things weren't scary for me. The thing that was scary, I go right back to the fact that it was reading records of inmates and seeing how they had been locked up for small things. And I looked and I saw where some had written a bad check and it had bounced and they didn't pay for it. And they were locked up. And I thought about the fact, now I've bounced a check. and took me a little while to pay off some of them that I had bounced, and I got them all taken care of. But they could have put the squeeze on me and could have locked me up. So now that's where it really got scary for me. But it never been scary with being in contact with inmates, because I've had 15 of them by myself and traveled all across the state of Tennessee. I've been to the inmates, to their homes, and in the roughest communities, and in the hospitals with them. And those weren't scary days. And the only thing I can say, that God was good, and because of the fact that I always treated them like they were people, I respected their dignity, I respected their humanity, and they respected me. And they looked out for me. And they didn't ever let anything happen to me. If anything came up, they would tell me about it because of that. And I was only saying that in preference, that sometimes church members are so scared to go behind the walls, not realizing the fact that if you work with people and you treat them right, you don't have to be scared. And all of us have a duty to do something in prison ministry. There is no excuse for us not to do anything in prison ministry. And in this particular PowerPoint presentation, I have a whole list of things that every church can do. And nobody has to go inside the prison. and do them. So, but I can't get to those today. So you definitely would have to come back tomorrow.
But we'll open it for a question and answer. Right,
yes. So you have about 10 minutes. If you have any questions?